Good evening, my gorgeous beings out there. You know, when you hear that message or that comes to you in that gorgeous music, you know it's Saturday. I think it's Saturday, isn't it, Richard?
As far as I can tell, no guarantees.
Yeah, and I've been...
either that or we've horribly screwed up and no one's here.
I don't know. I don't hear anybody. Maybe we did screw up. I don't know. Anyway, my lovelies, if you have heard this show before, you know that people request to talk to certain beings on the other side, and we bring forth some really interesting information. We ask them if they're willing to come, and I haven't had one say no yet, but this one is extremely different. If you get our email, you know that this is tonight, Emperor Constantine. And the interesting thing about Emperor Constantine is he came to me and asked if he could be on the radio show. I was trying to decide who to ask, and goodness gracious, he was right there asking if he could come. And I have to say, it's the first time that has ever happened. And just a little note about Emperor Constantine. If you're not familiar with his lifetime, he was the one that made what we are now calling Christianity the official church religion. And that is quite fascinating in itself. I'm not sure that a lot of people really know about that, that up to that point, the Romans worshipped many gods. Emperor Constantine brought in Christianity as the official religion of the Romans, which I think is rather significant. And the fact that he asked to give a message, I just love it. And so, in a moment, we are going to ask Richard to connect with his energy, and he will tell us what his energy feels like. And if you're new to the radio show, what we ask you to do is see in your third eye a picture of what you might think Emperor Constantine might have looked like. And there are some images of him on coinage of Rome, so you might have seen some of that. You may not, but you have some sort of image of what he might have looked like. And I'm looking at him now. It's interesting that he showed himself to me because he would have been what you might call the Byzantine rite. And his robes are rather ornate, not quite like Romans, but sort of like a cape around his shoulder and down over his body, and short, curly hair, and a crown indicating his stature in his world. And so you can think about that in your third eye, and in your quietly, you can call Emperor Constantine. And when Richard gives you the essence of what his energy feels like, you might be able to pick it up also and feel close to this being. And it is quite exceptional when you do this because energy and closer understanding of this being will come to you. It's quite fascinating. And what we are really doing here is using the right side of the brain, that side of the brain that brings in spiritual information. And I have to say that Richard teaches this on our in our work, and he is quite a master at this. And he will tell you now what Emperor Constantine's energy feels like. Richard.
I've been sitting here feeling his energy, and it surprises me. This man clearly was a warrior, a leader, and yet there's this beautiful, loving gentleness about this individual. I'm not saying he lacks power, or he lacks wisdom, but the overriding sense is of love and of gentleness. Really surprising, but that is my experience of this individual. It's not quite what I would expect, I guess, from someone who was a powerful emperor in his time in the Roman days, when the threads of needing to be a warrior were pretty important, quite interesting.
Indeed it is. And I anxiously await his message to us and our listeners, Richard. Be kind to bring that forth.
I asked to come forth on your radio show tonight because this time, as has been told to you, is a very auspicious time. And few understand the connection that it has with my lifetime and the things that I was responsible for doing in that lifetime. By that, I do not mean the path of becoming the emperor, but rather more my responsibility, my soul journey in that lifetime. This was very important, you might say, from a mission perspective, and it is something that is not at all understood by humanity. And so this is why I requested to come forth. You may find this a little surprising. Those of you who listened to the radio show with my mother, Helena, that is known in your records as Saint Helena, those that listened to that will understand some aspects of my journey that are not documented. Firstly, the common perception of my mother is that she was of lowly stock from a Central European or similar background. But in fact, as she brought forth in that radio show, and some records do acknowledge, she actually came from Britain. My father was assigned to Britain for a period of time, and it was here that they met. The records also suggest that she was of what is considered a lowly stock, you might say. In fact, she was from royalty in Britain, and this has been lost. I would also add that the notion of royalty in those times was a very different thing from the notions of royalty as it exists in your time. And she also brought forth the fact that she was raised in the Celtic Christian Church, which had been established by Joseph of Arimathea in Britain, and in many ways combined the teachings of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene with some of the Druidic traditions, married together some of these key threads. And it was this Celtic Christianity which my mother knew and understood and indeed taught to me. And the two of us worked quite closely together. And there are records which talk about some of the things which my mother did in terms of visiting the what you call Holy Land and so on. But in truth, she was very committed, not to Christianity as you have come to understand it, but indeed Christianity as it was originally taught by Yeshua and Mary Magdalene, and indeed by Joseph of Arimathea. And truly this had very little to do with what has become the Roman Catholic Church and its fundamental tenets. And it was from this base that I came to endorse the Christian church, you might say, as the Church of Rome. Records suggest that I was committed to Mithraism prior to my so-called conversion to Christianity, but really this has nothing to do with the truth. And indeed, if you understand Mithraism, it was primarily an acknowledgement of the sun and the astrological alignments and their progression. And really, this was in no manner in conflict with the fundamental teachings of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene. So there are many distortions that history has put in place about what various religions represented and their contrasts with so-called Christianity as it has evolved. And the key thing which my mother also mentioned when she came forth, and really I wish to reinforce, was that the key reason that Christianity, you might say, in its distorted form, was allowed to come forth as it was because I understood the importance of the name of Yeshua, in particular, surviving down through time until now. And I accepted the distortions that had come forth and the politics that was very much alive and well in the determination of the structure and the fundamental tenets of the so-called Christian church as it came forth from the Council of Nicaea. I understood those compromises. I have to say I did not foresee the abuses that would be meted out to so many committed followers of the true teachings of Yeshua over time by that church. However, the key thing that I wished to preserve, and indeed it was a key aspect of my mission, was that knowledge, that memory of Yeshua's name, even though there were distortions of who and what he was and what he was teaching. In a sense, in an important sense, they were really not that important. And there are others that have shared this message with you. But I wanted to bring this forth myself because it was me that made that decision about the trade-offs of what would constitute the Church of Rome as it became. Part of it also was to end the persecution of the Christians. And yes, there were forms of persecution that were meted out quite quickly by the Church as it set its foundations on the power of those in control of the church rather than being focused on the teachings of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene. But in a sense, I expected this because I was very aware of the traditions of the priestly class that had occurred in all religions from the time of Atlantis down. You see, what is not understood is that my mother and I were both able to channel. We were able to connect to consciousness beyond this earth plane, just as Carolyn and Richard do in this time. Because these two, in fact, do have a close connection to my mother and I. And so we had those skills. And so through that, we had an understanding of these distortions that had been in place. Not only that, we had a perspective of what had occurred in Atlantis and that there was this fall in consciousness on the planet and that fall would then be you might say, cancelled out and recovered from in due course. And so even though there are no records which display this to you, it indeed was a key aspect of the mission that I undertook in that lifetime. And indeed, it is no accident that that sign that I was given when I was going into battle against one of my rival emperors, you might say, was a sign that came from Yeshua. And again, history does not understand why that vision came forth and why I emblazoned it upon all of the livery of my troops, because it was a connection that I understood. It was of no surprise to me to have that vision of that symbol. And some of you understand its connection to the symbol that Richard and Carolyn use in their work that is on the bottom of most of the emails and web pages they send out. It is connected to the symbol that I witnessed in that time. So these threads are misunderstood and misrepresented. Again, the path that the Christian Church, as I loosely call it, has taken, in a sense, has been irrelevant, because the key objective was to preserve the memory of Yeshua, knowing that threads would connect to this memory in this time, because of the importance of the contribution of not only Yeshua, but also Mary Magdalene and their children to the unfolding of these changes. And really, the establishment of the Christian Church as the Church of Rome was driven from that perspective. And I would also like to comment upon your words about my energy. Yes, I learnt to be a warrior, and I was a very successful warrior. However, I was not driven from that perspective. History does record that I had a close connection with my mother, and indeed I preserved that connection through the time that she remained upon the planet, because we were both deeply spiritual individuals. We were both very aware, as I indicated, of who and what Yeshua and Mary Magdalene were. So these threads were very important, and we understood how to go within, to meditate, to unfold the truth of who and what we were. We understood who and what we were in a way that very few of humanity do today. So it is this connection to what is unfolding in your time that I wanted to come forth and share with you, to, in my own way, strengthen the connection between what I was doing then and what you are all doing now. And that is to bring forth the changes, the return to greatness, that is the human destiny. I, in my own way, played my small part in that unfolding, and it is in truth why I chose a path that would place me in that position of power to undertake this shift. So this is my fundamental message to you.
That's beautiful, and I thank you so much. I'm asking this question because I don't think a lot of our listeners perhaps know about some of the history of the time. And I'd like to bring forth a little bit of that, if you're willing. And one of the questions surrounds your encouraging your mother, who is known as Saint Helena, to bring forth, to find, you might say, the relics, objects that were known during the time of Yeshua. Can you give us a little background about that and what she actually found?
There is a mixture of hearsay and truth as to what my mother was doing and what she actually achieved during her travels. And the best way to look at this is to look at it within the context of the message that I just gave you, because fundamentally what she was doing was strengthening the connections that existed between the time that we were present upon the planet and the time that Yeshua and Mary Magdalene had been present working in the Middle East. And so she went forth to seek out the key locations, to seek out the key places where they had been working, and to, where possible, collect relics that represented that connection. So I do not wish to engage overly in the detail of exactly what she found and what she didn't find and what she brought back or didn't bring back, because in truth it is relatively unimportant. Again, it is part of the, you might say, dogmatic history which has grown up around all of that. Yes, it is true that there was a church built by me at her request in acknowledgement of one of those key sites. But more than that, it was her presence there, her energetic connection with those past times and those past locations, and in a way renewing that connection from their time to our time. And in its own way, we understood this was important to contribute to the flow of that connection down from their time to our time and then down through the Christian church as it became. So this really was the key purpose of her mission. The rest, in a sense, is, you might say, window dressing.
I like your phrase, window dressing. Well, you do see it as window dressing, and I honor your thoughts on it. I guess I see it as this sacred journey that she made, and she made this great contribution to bring, you might say, hard physical things back that indicated that Yeshua lived and what some of the things were that he did. You see, there are some people in the world that say that Yeshua was a myth, and we know that he wasn't. So that's why I asked the question to bring some firmness back to that idea. But I honor your thoughts, and I respect them.
If I may comment upon your reaction, I do not in any manner wish to demean the importance of my mother's trip and her connecting with that history. Indeed, that was the entire point of the trip. I am simply saying that the physical evidence was not really the important aspect, even though in your historical terms it might appear to be so. The fact that she went and made those connections in truth reinforced the reality of the existence of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene in that time and the work that they undertook. It really was very important what she was doing. And the records focus on the relics, you might say, but really it is not the relics that are important. It was the fact that she made that journey and renewed that energetic connection between the earlier time and our own. So that is why I expressed it in those terms. I do not wish to demean the importance of the work that my mother undertook to refresh that connection to the time of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene and our own time.
Thank you so much for your thoughts on the matter. I am asking this question not for myself, rather for the listeners who hear this message. Tell me why this was an important part of your mission, to bring forth that connection between us and the knowledge of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene. Just why was that important?
It is not well understood that there are threads of consciousness which need to be sustained through the time from the fall in Atlantis to the completion of what I would term the return to that level of consciousness. It is like almost a basket, an energetic basket that underpins the human journey through this dark and difficult period. So there were what you might consider spiritual threads that were woven that connected the time in Atlantis before the fall, indeed before the interference to any extent by dark, down through this time and through to your time and the completion of this unfolding. As I said, it's like an energetic basket. And in a way, the Essenes carried that connection back to Atlantis. They were aware of their roots. And so this, in its own way, created a foundation for the work that Yeshua and Mary Magdalene were undertaking. Some of the other threads that have traveled down through time are the knowledge and the wisdom that the Magi carried coming forth from Atlantis and surviving down through time. And indeed, there are threads of their activities that continue down to this time. Some of them indeed are present in the gypsy populations of Europe. It is not well understood the level of spiritual knowledge and wisdom that some elements of those gypsy people, as you would know them, have. So in a way, they carry the threads of those Magi traditions down to now. Another one is the existence of the Ark of the Covenant. And yes, that history has been distorted somewhat, as it is claimed by the Jewish religion and by Christianity that the Ark was created by Moses. But indeed, this is not true. If one examines the history of Egypt, you will find festivals celebrating the Ark and its presence within ancient Egyptian culture. And so it was present in Egypt well before Moses went forth. And as has been mentioned on the show before, the one that you know as Moses was also the one known as the Pharaoh Akhenaten. And so he understood that it was necessary to take that ark from Egypt down to what would become Solomon's temple. And I do not wish to retell the story of the Ark of the Covenant, but I will say to you that there are threads that sustain the journey of the ark from Atlantean time down to this time. So here are, in a sense, three examples of what I've referred to as this spiritual underpinning, this spiritual basket which has held human consciousness from the time of Atlantis down to this time and through to time when the consciousness will be recovered upon this planet. And so what we were doing was, in a sense, connecting some of the pieces that would sustain this thread, the spiritual thread, which through the Essenes and their understanding of their traditions connected back to Atlantis was reinforced in many ways by the work of Yeshua and Mary Magdalene. And then we picked that thread up in our time. My mother, Helena, went and reconnected, in a sense, back to the Middle East, as we have discussed. And then by establishing the Christian church in all of its distortions as the Church of Rome, it set up a basis for the memories of Yeshua, the existence of Yeshua, to survive to your time. So that is what this was doing. Putting in place another of these spiritual threads that wove this basket is how I am describing it, that is underpinning this human journey through this dark, difficult time.
Thank you so much for your insight. And yes, it has been a dark time, and many people are feeling it now. We are seeing so much darkness now. Could you give our listeners a sense of what to expect in the near future as this darkness drops away?
In some ways, humanity will experience even more darkness than they have already been aware of, because the darkness is becoming more visible, more exposed to human experience as they fight to, you might say, cement and finalize their grasp of humanity. So it will, in some ways, for some, seem darker than it already has. But really, it is just the exposure of their dark and devious plans on so many levels coming to the surface. So you can expect this as part of this transition. But also in parallel with this will be the emergence of those who will and are leading this transformation. And there are many beings who are participating in this that don't even realize that they are participating. There are those who have been prompted to study and bring forth information about the past, about the journeys that groups of beings have undertaken on the planet, those that have been prompted to bring forth the truth about the existence of advanced cultures, of advanced civilization upon the planet, preceding the time of what's known as the Stone Age. So all of these things have been woven into this time, and some of this knowledge is well in place, and it in its own way forms a foundation for what will be unfolding. But as events progress, there will be those who will step forth into the public eye, demonstrating skills and abilities and, you might say, physical form, which will carry undeniable messages about this shift. And that fundamental message will be this bringing forth of a perfected, rejuvenated physical form, which will start with a core group and then gradually spread out throughout humanity as those who wish to participate in this join in their way into this transition. So this is the key mix that I see. It will be a turbulent time. It will be challenging for so many, as so many people's beliefs will be shaken to their core as they begin to understand how duped they have been on so many levels, how dumbed down they have been, how distracted they have been, whilst those who wish to control and manipulate, and indeed in many cases destroy them, have gone about their devious and nefarious methods and mischiefs. So all of this will come forth through this challenging and difficult time, but it is important for humanity to understand what has been done to them, what games have been played, because they need to individually claim back their sovereignty from these distortions. It is a very necessary step, and some will not achieve that in this lifetime. And there is no judgment in any of that, but the opportunity will be there for all to grasp this opportunity if they wish.
Thank you so much for your perception. Where, in your perception, comes the time? Now, you're telling us about this darkness yet that humanity will be going through. How far away is this transition that you speak of? Do we have long to wait for this change to be expressed in the physical body?
In many ways, you are already in the time of this transition. You're already beginning to see the exposure of the nefarious practices of the dark. People are not so readily duped today as they were when the 9/11 duplicity was executed. So, in a sense, that is part of the shift. But indeed, the unfolding of this change in the physical is very near, and I am not truly in a place to be able to tell you an exact date or an exact moment when it will unfold in your experience. But I can tell you that it is indeed very close.
I would like to thank you so much for what you have brought forth. And these are things that people really need to know. And so thank you so much for coming forth and sharing these insights with us and our listeners. And thank Richard for bringing this gentle, loving Emperor Constantine to our attention. We have time, Richard, to discuss some other matters. And I would like to ask you about something. We are working on the soul origin, the journey to the monads of individuals. And some of the stories that have been brought forth have really been extraordinary. And I would like for you to discuss some of the things that have grabbed your attention, some of the things that you felt were remarkable in those particular soul journeys.
Before we do that, Carolyn, I just want to check, is your microphone kind of sitting on your face or something? It's kind of very noisy somehow. There's a lot of noise happening. Maybe that will be better. Wow, it's the kind of put me on the spot. These journeys really are just amazing, is the only way I can describe them. It's, you know, when we begin these sessions, when the individual contacts us, we really don't know how these things are going to unfold. And the nature of the journeys that come forth, the nature of the journey of the monad, is inevitably truly quite extraordinary. The roles that various individuals have played in the unfolding of the human journey has just been quite extraordinary. I know one that we've been working on currently in the last few days is a situation where this gentleman's monad has sent forth aspects at a particular time of challenge in the world to be watchers, to be observers, to be experiencers, you might say, of where things have gone off track in the human experience. And having done that, it has then sent forth fingers of consciousness to then participate in the correction of these errors. And so it's an extraordinary tale, really. An example would be in the time when the Greeks became very, you know, were very warlike and would battle to defend their territories, and their, you know, mothers were proudly raising sons to be warriors rather than being gentle, teaching the aspects of love and gentleness and so on. And this brought forth this time of great warriors in Greece. And so aspects were sent forth to participate in it, to understand it, and subsequently other fingers of consciousness were sent forth to redirect the focus within Greece, to move more towards the philosophical time, the appreciation of architecture, the appreciation of the perfection of the physical body, not to be a warrior so much, but to just for the admiration of the perfection of the physical form in and of itself. So this is an example, and there were similar steps taken at many points in time. So this is just one illustration. There have been so many amazing paths that these monads have walked to assist humanity, and these stories are just extraordinary. And as I mentioned before, when we send these out to the people that have requested them, we really do not understand how well it's going to connect with the individual. We always send them out, you might say, with heart in mouth almost, because we just don't know whether it's going to resonate with the individual, and inevitably it does. So these are some of the threads, I guess, that I would share in relation to.
Thank you, Richard. I'd like to bring forth some thoughts about this. It is, to me, like the monad, the complete soul, chose a mission to act and react in a certain way. And what I find interesting is that in the different stories that we have told, the monads, or the complete soul, all have a different goal or a different perception of life or a different mission as to how they will participate in life. And so far, we have not seen a case where the monads are doing the same work. And I find that rather fascinating, that each one of the monads that we have looked at so far are on a different path of creation from one another. There does seem to be assistance. Monads can get together and assist others to help, but they all seem to have their own expertise, their own, like, quarter of where they're going to work. Don't you think that's fascinating?
I do. I do. And as I've commented before, I think one of the interesting things is how there's been this understanding that has unfolded, beginning with the very earliest aspects of creation, coming down through the unfolding, down to the experience here on Earth, and how all of this has unfolded, and indeed the role that the particular soul in this lifetime is playing in all of this. So it's truly quite extraordinary, the content of these journeys. And yes, they do all differ, as you say. Quite fascinating.
Well, I was fortunate enough to see the creation of the monads, or as I called it, the creation of the souls. And I did not see all there is except working in light. And the area that he worked in was so large, it was almost like looking into forever, so that the particles that he was working with were extremely large. And these particles came forth from all there is. And so the monads themselves are made up of particles from all there is, from the creator of all. And there were great beams of light. In other words, when the different souls were created, there were different lights used. It was like light screens that was infiltrated into the particles that came forth from all there is. And I suspect that these particles, the colors that imbued the particles themselves, represented the kind of work that they would be doing. And so much of what all there is sent forth in creating the cosmos, and the different beings, the souls that were responsible for different aspects of the creation of the cosmos, their records show a concentration of a certain color. So I suspect in that, Richard, that the colors, or the, shall we say, the main color that was used in the creation of the soul had to, you might say, place an inclination as to the kind of work that that particular soul would be working with. And I suspect that that's the answer. And I will say that the range of colors was extremely large. And so that's part of at least my understanding of how this has come into pass. Don't you think that's interesting?
I do. I suspect that's very much the case, though I think there are probably gradations in the choices that get made by the monads, you know, within all of that, that are subtly different. And maybe it does come back to the colors. Carolyn, you mentioned that you have been able to witness that creation, and I don't think anyone on that's listening to this radio show now or on the recording will have had that experience, and you kind of referred to it a bit, but I was wondering if you could perhaps describe what it is like to see a monad being created in that way.
What it's like. Well, I would say, first of all, it humbles me. And I know that I have had the luxury, the blessing of experiencing these things, not for myself, but for sharing with other people these events, because it seems that, at least in this respect, everyone cannot do this. And I can't say for certain why I am able to do it. I just know that I am. And I don't know what I have done to warrant such magnificent experiences, but I do know it's not for me. It is for others that I'm able to do this. So that was the sense that I felt. The majesty and the beauty of it, and as these souls were created, all there is sent forth this sound. I could not duplicate it, trust me. It was an extraordinary sound that actually put these particles into place, that moved the particles. It reminded me of maybe an eerie sound on the moors in Scotland or some strange place like this. And it's hard to describe it, but it gave me chills when I heard it. So the light came forth, the colors came forth, the sound came forth, and there was a swirling circular action where they danced. The particles just seemed like they were dancing. And there were also angels in place that were assisting all there is with directing these particles. As I said, they swirled and danced and coalesced, and it was quite, quite fascinating. And hopefully, as I say these words, if people concentrate upon it, they might be able to connect with that sense of wonder and awe, because I do believe all of this is energy. And if you concentrate upon energy, you're going to have some experience of what we're talking about. You can't concentrate upon energy, in my opinion, and it not in some way affect you. But color and sound, it was like a light show. You think about these shows that these Hollywood performers do with lights. Well, the creation table where these souls were created was so large, it seemed like eternity itself. It was that large. You could not see the end of it. And so it was a light show that was so intense, so widespread, that there seemed like there was no end to it. It was quite remarkable.
Amazing. Thank you for sharing that, Carolyn. It's, as I said, it's not something that I know anyone else has experienced. Certainly I have not, and it's just an amazing thing that you are able to witness that for whatever reason.
Thank you, Tweety. We have 2 minutes, and how would you like to use those 2 minutes to close the show today?
Well, I would like to ask Constantine if he has anything that he would like to add to what has already been said and covered. He says that he would. I want to emphasize the importance of the time that you all find yourselves in. I know there are many that have been disillusioned by the expected unfolding at the end of last year. But in truth, it was, as others have said, set up in that expected way to distract those who would seek to prevent it unfolding. And it had its desired effect, because they have been distracted from the key things that needed to be put in place. They indeed were put in place, and all indeed is unfolding as intended. It may not seem to be so in your experience, given your expectations. And there are many, I know, that are listening to this show live or will listen to the recording, that have suffered greatly in this lifetime and are suffering greatly in this lifetime, either because of physical disability or illness or indeed interference from those of the dark that continue to interfere with them in very unpleasant ways. I understand that these things are continuing, but I say to you, have faith and know that all will unfold as it is intended. There is simply no way that this can not unfold. The pieces are in place. The key people that needed to make the contributions that I mentioned earlier have indeed made those contributions. There is an awakening going on. There is a resistance emerging in humanity to the manipulation that has been in place for so long on so many levels. The understandings are coming forth. So simply keep stepping. Envision your life and your future as you wish to see it, and all will come to pass. That is my final message to you all.
Thank you so much. And Richard, we're out of time now. Maybe,
oh, there you go.
Maybe you could say goodbye to our friends.
Well, goodbye, everyone. And thank you for joining us, and Carolyn, for your wonderful contribution as ever.
And yours too, Richard. Good night, everyone.